Welcome, Red Eyes members. We are talking with Freeman, and we are continuing our interesting conversation about World War III, the weaponization of space, and Barack Obama, and the idea of the image of Barackanauten. We're going to return to that a little bit later on here in this segment, but I do want to ask you, Freeman, to, I guess, speculate a little bit more about this possibility of how they're bringing in objects, as it were, if in fact, we're seeing that these are this is more than coincidence, as it were. We're seeing these explosions, light shows, sonic booms, what have you, over specific areas at a specific time. And again, very timely, they can seem to be that this is something that is happening at the same point in time where they need some kind of proponent or a catalyst to bring in this idea of weaponization of space. Now, Freeman, do you think that they possibly are using HAARP to attract objects from outer space that are out there? Or do you think that this is, again, a show I put on, that they're actually firing something here? What's your take on it?
Well, that was my first question when noticing that one in 1999, was, do we have the ability to hurl meteors at our own planet? You know, are they shooting these off? Do they have some satellite out there that's able to direct these towards us? Because the meteor that went over the HAARP facility was just too perfect. You know, they happened to be testing it as a meteor deflection shield, and then a meteor comes straight at the HAARP facility. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, these coupling with the earthquakes. Some of my thoughts lead to the idea of coupling vibratory waves, of the scalar waves. Now, when we understand HAARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, which was shooting ultra-low radio frequency waves up into the ionosphere and generating plasma clouds. Now, what happens when you couple these plasma clouds? Because we know that there are more antenna arrays like HAARP around the globe, in Australia and New Zealand. And so the potential of coupling these scalar waves to cause a reaction that then generates these massive flash and sonic booms. And of course, you know, to be sure to note that when Milosevic, when we were first going into the Gulf War, the front page of USA Today said that Milosevic accused the U.S. of using HAARP technologies to cause earthquakes and floods in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Now, this was front page news. So, you know, and then you get into Benjamin Fulford's stuff and you look into the earthquakes there with China, we start to understand that this is a side effect of this type of scalar weaponry. So when we're seeing these type of attacks, if you want to call it that, these incoming objects that are causing anomalous sonic booms and then earthquakes, we really should be looking towards these type of technologies like HAARP. Mm. But whether or not they are actual meteors, no one knows. The astronomers don't know.
Yeah.
Or if they are just a show being given by this technology coupling scalar waves and causing this type of reaction, we don't know.
Very difficult. And again, because of this explosion and the consequent lighting up of if it is true that it's an object, the evidence disappears in most cases right there. I mean, okay, we could have some kind of debris falling to the ground, but again, very minute and very difficult to find, if so. So, yeah, well, it's an interesting point of view. And again, we could even have a freaking, you know, base up on the moon. If, you know, again, we were talking about this idea in the first segment, that we are not prone to utilize the fruits, as it were, of our scientific knowledge, but they are. So at this point, we don't know if they have some kind of base on the moon. They can have devices there where they can shoot stuff at us. We simply don't know. It's a possibility, but it might be a stretch. What do you think, Freeman?
Well, the moon itself is such an anomaly on its own. The mysterious ideas of the moon, you know, many people think that the moon was part of Earth that then was, you know, put out into space, but this just doesn't fit the true story of what's going on. Because the moon itself is an anomaly.
Yes.
It's much older than the Earth. The metals that we have found on there are not of the Earth. The moon's age, The Earth's age is estimated to be 4.6 billion years, but the moon, the rocks that we got were dated to 5.3 billion years old. So the dust and everything that is another billion years older. Mm-hmm. So the moon is much older than the Earth. The elements on the surface are unlike what we find on Earth there, and they do not go along with the materials found on Earth. And the idea of the hollow moon.
Well, there you go. Exactly. I think that's the largest, in a way, anomaly of in itself, because I think that what probably has been the case is that we have had, you know, large collisions. And again, this is scientifically out in the open now, pretty much, that they're talking about collisions that happened about 4.5 billion years ago or something like that. We can see the debris fields around here and there. But what is interesting is what you just mentioned, Freeman, the fact that it's hollow. And I think that they did this test when they were shooting, was it a missile or a rocket into the moon? And they were measuring the seismic activity, and the whole moon rang like a bell or something like that, which in a sense proved that the moon probably is hollow. Do you remember that test that they did, Freeman?
Yes, absolutely. There was a Soviet astronomer who was getting into the moon quakes and the hundred of moons quakes that were going on with these gaseous eruptions. I'm horrible with Russian names. yes, absolutely. They determined that these seismic activities shouldn't be occurring because it doesn't have the same structure as the Earth with volcanic eruptions. Mm-hmm. Then they determined that the moon's density was 3.34 grams, which is equal to the volume of water, whereas Earth's density is 5.5. Well, what does this mean? The Dr. Gordon McDonald came in and says that if the astronomical data is correct, then we need to realize that the interior moon of the moon is more hollow than a homogeneous sphere. So, yeah, we have many scientists coming forth saying that the gravitational field does not seem correct, that everything that suggests that the moon is hollow. Now, I was telling you before we went on air that I went to Walt Disney World in Orlando.
Yeah, definitely.
And just a little curious note, first of all, Walt Disney, Freemason from Missouri, hired by J. Edgar Hoover, 33rd degree Freemason, to instill mind pattern programming into children. This was Walt Disney's job. We just did a film on Hannah Montana, and we'll get a little more to her, and all the different products. When you go into Walmart and Target and even the grocery store, the auto parts store, it is just filled with Hannah Montana products. Mm-hmm. She has everything you could possibly imagine with her face on it. Just showing you the unification of what we consider separate corporations or not separate corporations. And of course, the corporation is another magical act. Mm-hmm. It does not exist. It's created with the flick of a pen. When you think of Coca-Cola owning all the water in Chiapas, who do you think of when you think of Coca-Cola? Not a person, right? They are not a person. They are an entity that's been crafted.
Absolutely.
Well, so I'm going into Walt Disney World, and next thing I know, they're taking a laser print scan of my finger to enter the park. And then you enter that large ball, the Bucky ball that is the Spaceship Earth, what they call Spaceship Earth, sponsored by Siemens.
Mm-hmm.
When you go inside of there, they give you the history of the world, and they tell you how they created language, how the Phoenicians created the sciences that we use. And they give you this whole history of the world of how great they all are for creating these things for us. But as you go along, there's a little computer screen in front of you, and it asks you where you're from, what your favorite things are. And then next thing you know, they take your picture. Uh-huh. And you become a character on this cartoon that's playing out in front of you on the computer screen.
Okay.
So within the first 10 minutes of being within Epcot Center, the experimental prototype civilization of tomorrow, they have your entire biometrics.
Okay. Sheesh, my God.
You can couple this with the latest trend that's coming through Zeitgeist movies and Zeitgeist Addendum and the Venus Project, mm-hmm. which is in Venus, Florida, which is just below Epcot, and they're trying to build another experimental prototype civilization of tomorrow, and of course attach a theme park to it And Venus, as if you know my symbolism study, Venus is Lucifer. So we could very much call this the Lucifer Project. And I always wondered why Zeitgeist had so much popularity. Now I know, promoting these Luciferian ideals. But yeah, right outside of that big buckyball, the spaceship Earth, is what they call leave a legacy. And so everyone is having their faces laser etched onto these titanium metal to be left there for all time, so that now they have all the biometrics of everyone that's ever been to this park or was willing to pay the money to have their face put on these metal plates outside of the buckyball. You know, they're gathering all of this data. At the same time, just yesterday in the news, they're saying that they're taking blood samples from every newborn without the parents' consent.
There you go.
These guys have always been into this type of eugenic studies and trying to get this very particular bloodlines ruling and running. And we're going to get in a little deeper of the bloodlines of the royalty and the new elite. It's just too much. You know, Hillary's related to Madonna. Barack is related to George Bush and Brad Pitt. Yeah. You know, and I'm starting to wonder if Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie might not be the new Adam and Eve.
Well, yeah, they could be. Again, Angelina Jolie's member of Council on Foreign Relations. All of this stuff is going on. They're UNICEF, you know, here and there, and. Yep, very much the whole celebrity bloodline thing is very much running in all this as well. And again, this idea that this is just common people that are, you know, accidentally made it or because of their talent or what have you. They have millions upon millions to choose from. Why is it that just a selected few get in the positions that they're in regards to celebrity? It's not an accident. They're being used. Purposes.
This is our new royal elite. Yes. Like I was saying, that Elvis was shown as a hologram with Celine Dion. Celine Dion is a direct descendant of Hillary Clinton or their relations. Madonna, Celine Dion, and Angelina Jolie are all related to Hillary Clinton. And then Brad Pitt, Gerald Ford, Lyndon Johnson, and George Bush are all related to Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And then guess who's related to John McCain? Britney Spears. I mean, come on.
Okay.
You know, this is getting to be too much.
That's really, really interesting. It's a heck of a story that is unfolding here, as it were. You mentioned, the eugenics plan, and I guess we can tie this together, obviously, then with the Nazi theme here again, and talk a little bit more about the Pope and get into the Vatican as well, right, Freeman?
Absolutely. I mean, are they getting strange here? Things are going very strange with the Vatican. Now, right off of Reuters News, let's just jump with the latest news. Pope warns on new eugenics based on beauty. So the Pope said Saturday that there were signs of this new type of eugenics based on perfection and physical beauty. You know, this takes us right back to Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, you know?
Right.
So here is the Pope coming out now saying this is a real threat. Oh, my God. You know, we're doing experimental manipulation and allowing biotechnology to surrender to the will of the strongest. And, of course, he's saying he condemns this genetic engineering of designer babies.
Mm-hmm.
But the Vatican's been coming out with all of these amazing stories. The last one was the Pope's astronomer, Jose Gabriel Funes, a Jesuit priest who came out and said, there are a multiplicity of creatures on Earth, and this suggests that there are other beings created by God beyond it.
Yeah.
And so this Jesuit priest of the Vatican comes out to say that there's no problem with the idea of extraterrestrials and the Bible. We have no problems with this type of correlation, but when he goes on, he goes on to say that these extraterrestrials most likely didn't suffer original sin.
Mm-hmm.
So now what are they setting us up for here? When the Vatican say that the extraterrestrials are beyond us, that they don't even suffer original sin like us poor lowly earthlings, we got to start to question. And when it's coming from another Jesuit priest, you know,
that's interesting. And again, I mean, I guess it is a matter of interpretation upon what it is, you know, in the Bible. We can think about you know, the seraphim or the cherubim or the Rephaim or whoever, you know, you want to call it, and then the descendants of that potentially connecting with the Nephilim, of course. But again, it's all the perspective and how they choose to spin it at this time. They know that the alien question is kind of hip and in, as it were, so to twist their own theology towards this direction. Or again, this might have been the case all along. We don't know that, but it's definitely an interesting perspective, that's for sure.
It is. It's setting the stage.
Yes.
It's definitely setting the stage. And then they go on to there was a lawsuit against the Vatican by the Templars, you know, saying you owe us $1.5 million, or I think it was more of $100 million, $150 million. And it turns out that Pope Benedict, who is named after the ruler of the Templars, Benedict, the rules of Benedict are what the Templars were following. So we have another correlation with his name and the Templars. But it turns out that Pope Benedict, before he became Pope, right, when he was still Cardinal Ratzinger, was investigating the Knights Templar and the Illuminati. Now, he was digging into Hertfordshire in England, trying to get ideas and understandings of the Illuminati before all of this happened. So what happened was that next thing we know, the Vatican brings out a book on the Templars' demise. They're going to publish this book, and it's from the Chinon parchment, and what they have found is that the document recorded the heresy hearings and actually exonerates the Templars in their, saying that they did not do these horrible things that the Pope of 1300s burnt them at the stake for.
Yeah.
Now, it is in watching these type of correlations that I'm making my predictions. So as I'm watching this concept of the Templars and them being exonerated and the ideas of what's going on, I use these type of signposts to make my predictions. And so I knew that 1013 was going to be a large date in this symbolism. Just as I had said and noted the date of 9/11, now I had become, and I didn't have a voice back then. I didn't have anyone to tell, and I wondered many times what would happen if I had just known about Alex Jones back then and phoned in and said, hey, there's going to be a major terrorist attack on 9/11. Because I knew 3 years running. I'd been talking about this for years and years. I have many witnesses to my prediction, but I didn't make it public. So now I have a public voice. Now I'm out in front of the public, and I want to show that the science I'm forming is valid. And so on Jack Blood, Deadline Live, I went ahead and made my next prediction, which was for 10/13. Mm-hmm. And then each year, because I'm usually a couple of years ahead in my predictions, I highlighted 10/13. I did a special event on each of the consecutive 10/13s. The last one with the High Priest of the Church of Satan, Rex Church, which you can find on my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. I did with Rex Church on 10/13 at Ground Zero Lounge at Dante's, if we can get any more symbolism in there. but so sure enough, I had made this prediction there was going to be another major event like 9/11, only probably not as dramatic on 10/13. Mm-hmm. And I was using different signposts of the fact that the Pope had come to America for his birthday and visited W at the White House.
Yes.
So then in response to this, well, then he went on Hitler's birthday. He went to visit Ground Zero and gave a speech asking for eternal light. Back to Luciferian symbolism. Mm-hmm. But then on Friday the 13th, okay, so let's understand that 10/13 is October 13th, which is the date that the Pope and the King came together and passed a bull saying that the Templars were heretics and they should all be burnt at the stake. And this is the infamous 10/13, which became Friday the 13th because it was on a Friday.
Yeah.
And so now that's the most unlucky day.
Yes.
Well, on Friday the 13th, after the Pope had visited W at for his birthday, W visited the Pope in at the Vatican what on was, Friday the 13th.
And this was 2008, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Because I think you were. We also talked with you on in 2007, just a few days before 10/13. And I mean, if you go back to 2007, did you see anything happen? Did that? Do you think that your prediction that you made became did that come into fruition, so to speak, or has this trickled out through all the October 13s from that year and onwards? Or what do you see happened here consequently?
Well, it absolutely did happen. And I just want to note that when W met with the Pope at the Vatican on Friday the 13th, they met in St. John's Tower. And yes. St. John, of course, is the saint of the Freemasons. And also, this was an unheard of event that the Pope doesn't hold guests at St. John's Tower. But yeah. Here they are at St. John's Tower on Friday the 13th. Well, yes, absolutely. Next thing you know, while I'm speaking with Rex Church at Dante's Inferno, this whole event was going down. And I'm highlighting all of these different correlations with 10/13. That's the time when Nero took Rome. That's the moment of the Fatima, when the Virgin Mary came, was 10/13. So next thing I know, the next day, after 10/13, the news comes out, and there's a large article that says 10/13 was bigger than 9/11. And I'm like, I told you guys so. But this was a bit of a quiet coup, because, well, not too quiet, but people didn't see it for what it was. But on October 13th of last year, Secretary Paulson and the Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, invited all the CEOs of the 9 largest banks to meet in Washington, D.C., and they were not told why. Mm-hmm. But to quote them, to their astonishment, they were handed a one-page document that said they agreed to sell shares to the government. And then Paulson said they must sign it before they left. Now, this was a coup that happened on 10/13, as I predicted, and the news is even calling it bigger than 9/11. But no one really noticed because it was such a quiet takeover. But this is the moment that the international banksters took over the 9 banks in America, the 9 main. And so,
do you think now, that laid the groundwork for what we've seen here in the recent couple of months?
Yes, exactly. This was the beginning of all of that. And it happened just as I had predicted on 10/13, because I'm watching the occult dates, I'm watching the Templar connections, I'm watching these little signposts.
Yes.
And I do have a new prediction coming from all of this.
Okay.
So, you know, it was curious, though, because Paulson had been completely against this signing of this bill. And then suddenly on 10/13, he just comes out and says, okay, you guys have to sign this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's curious. I wonder, you know, which priestcraft went into there and told Paulson that he was going to have to force this on this date. So using this same type of process, I'm looking at the situation today, and one of the main dates with the Templar organization is the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many people correlate the 4th of July with American independence, or even now with extraterrestrials invading, with, you know, ID4.
Yes.
What we have now is Barack Obama working to push Israel's borders back to pre-1967 dates.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've been highlighting for some time now, this idea of the Temple Mount, of course, is very important to the Templars, very important to the symbolism. And whatever it is that the Templars found under that mount is very curious. That's a piece of the puzzle that would really help us pull this together.
Mm-hmm.
But none of us really know what the Templars found under there. All we know is after these 9 knights went under, they suddenly became the richest, most powerful organization in the world.
Pretty much, yeah.
So what I'm looking at now is as they're pushing these borders back for Israel, I believe they're going to take the Temple Mount back. I believe it's going to be dated to the same timeline as when the Templars lost Jerusalem, which was July 4th, I believe is 1187. They lost the Temple Mount on the 4th of July.
Really? I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay.
Okay. And also this new Freedom Tower that replaced the Twin Towers, its cornerstone is dated to the 4th of July.
And which year? This year? Or has it
the
all
cornerstone?
Been, yeah, has it all been laid for the Freedom Tower?
The cornerstone has been laid. I did have that note with me, but then my computer crashed and I don't have it up anymore.
Ah, okay.
But yes, the cornerstone was laid. The Masons all came in. They were talking about how these Masons had to travel all these large distances to get there and put on this celebration and ceremony. And of course, if you're familiar with Freemasons, then you know that they cast corn, wine, and oil, and they call upon spirits and all of these things as they lay these cornerstones, just as George Washington laid the cornerstone on 1013 at the White House, right? So now we've got the cornerstone for the new Freedom Tower laid on July 4th, which is the date that the Templars lost the Temple Mount. I believe on the 4th of July, maybe this year, maybe next, like I say, I'm usually a few years ahead of my time. I think that we're going to see a Temple Mount takeover on the 4th of July. That's my next Illuminati watch date.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I'm looking at here right now, New York lays cornerstone for Freedom Tower. This actually took place back in 2004. That's interesting.
Yes, so it was a while back.
While back, yeah, that's for sure. And, of course, you know, we have for those who might not know, the Freedom Tower, the whole 1776 feet tall, you know, there's symbolism definitely involved in the Freedom Tower. It looks like basically the two towers incorporated into one, again, tying back this whole idea of the Baruch Akhenaten idea, the unifier, as it were, of bringing these two dichotomies, the two opposites, to together to one point. And again, much the same thing with the building of potentially the new Temple of Solomon on Temple Mount, or, you know, that this is about, in some way, from their perspective, of course, uniting everything and bringing everything back together again. It's a time for a new religion, a new era of world peace, and this will, of course, not take place before we have eradicated a lot of people, which, you know, they've been doing now for the latest, you know, I don't know what, thousand, couple of years, you know. And again, it seems to be that everyone who's not fitting into their idea of oneness and world peace, be that a people or a particular group or whatever it might be, the easiest way for them is just genocide, you know, get rid of them, and then after that point we can all unite in wondrous peace and a new era will begin. It's really sickening, actually.
It really is. It really is. And you know, the one thing that I always keep in mind is this idea of our free will agreement. And so as long as we don't buy into the propaganda, as long as we start to see through the shenanigans, you know, the prestidigitation, then we don't no longer give our free will agreement. I really do feel like this is a God force that they have to overcome, because they constantly tell us what they're going to do, or else they put it out in some fashion that we can take it in, and then we agree with it, whether we realize it or not. I mean, you know, this is kind of pushing the boundaries of reality, but when you look at the in 1996, when they made the new American dollar bills, and you could fold from the 5 to the 100 in the exact same fashion, and you got the twin towers. You know, the 5 had the two towers, the 10 had the first strike, the 20 had the second strike and the Pentagon getting hit, the 50 had the towers fallen, and the 100 just a wisp of smoke. Now, I wonder if they're programming our holographic mind, because all of a sudden on that date, on 9/11, I had three people at my door, because like I was saying, I had predicted the event, asking me. I had a number of people at the door asking me how I knew, but three of them already had their bills folded like a little airplane showing the Twin Towers. Now, to me, this is beyond reason.
Yeah.
I cannot see somebody just figuring this out on that day.
Sure.
But because I had the foreknowledge, because I had predicted this event, then I could see this for what it was. And I see it as a magical spell. I see these guys as occultists, and this is how they work.
And it's very interesting what you say in regards to the holographic mind, because, again, the holographic idea is that everything is incorporating the smaller portions of things. The whole is incorporated in the small, meaning that if a few people know about this, you know, let's say how you fold that particular bill in order to create this image, that is in a way that is out there, that is accessible, and even actually I think that our brains potentially can make these types of calculations by itself in a sense, on an unconscious level, of course, meaning that we don't consciously know that this is what we're looking at when we're holding a bill like that, what you're describing.
Exactly.
But we can put it together in an unconscious way, meaning that the signs and the symbols, as it were, is all over the place. And this is potentially also how they are, you know, creating reality. I think that they're doing that with our aid. I think that they need to put this out there ahead of time, not only to try to just, you know, get us to go along with it, but also think that we collectively, the human race, are participatory in actually how reality plays out and even how successful it plays out, meaning that the longer and the more blatantly they've managed to get a symbol, a sign, some kind of indication of what they're planning to do out there in our collective mind unconsciously, probably the more successful this event will become. Do you follow my train of thought, Freeman?
I agree with you exactly on that. And I see, you know, when I stated that there was going to be a major terrorist attack, I said, don't, you know, this is all for your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So now I see people like Alex Jones, not as a foe, but as someone who bought into the story and therefore is now giving the proper reaction that they were expecting. The 9/11 was so obviously an inside job. I mean, it was so obvious that it was a controlled demolition. But they knew that there would be a split between the people of that those that could agree that the government's evil and those that couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And they expected this war to create itself. And so Alex is just following exactly as they had intended. And that was my whole point, was like, you know, don't get upset about this. Don't start to freak out and want war, because that's what they're trying to get from you, is this angry response.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's playing into the game and absolutely just replying to probably what they want to begin with. And that's why it's so important to study it, be aware of it, of course, but again, not maybe on that emotional level to be drawn into it. Yet again, it's very difficult because also, at the same time, what you're doing is that you're, you know, when you bring in this information out there to the majority of the people, then you're also helping to contribute to their own kind of awakening to a larger reality that might begin at the end or at the start point, I should say, of 9/11, and begin to realize that, wait a minute, you know, something's not right here, and they begin to open up their mind. Consequently, a whole new world potentially is opening up to them, and they might be going to these, you know, wonderful areas of later on, you know, the occult, esoteric, things going on behind the surface, spirituality, etc., etc. So it's a good opening, an eye opener for people to begin to study it. But then again, I guess what you're saying is to not be drawn into the reactionary mode of the programming that is going on here. Is that right?
That's exactly correct. Yeah, if we start to look at everyone now, Bush leaves office and signs a little legislation saying, "Well, you guys can't prosecute me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm exonerated from any crimes I might have done. Let me just throw out this last executive order before I leave." This is to foment more people to start to push for a world court, to get people angry enough so that they're wanting to get revenge, to get justice, And so they're going to be asking and begging for a world court to take down these people. And so we fulfill the agenda by them pulling on our heartstrings.
Well,
absolutely.
That's interesting you mentioned that. I actually got the same hunch about, we have a case here now in Sweden about Pirate Bay, actually, all the torrent stuff that is going on. And one idea that has been circulating around this, the idea of file sharing I'm talking about here, has been that, you know, these guys can only move to another place and set up their service there and continue their business, so to speak, from there. And what I'm seeing this leading into eventually is the possible suggestion of a world court or some kind of international law that can override national law and consequently try to get towards these people. I'm not saying that everyone, you know, within the Pirate Bay, whatever, is in on this. But again, there's a lot of interesting people that is involved in these types of cases. And who knows, these types of things might be used for another purpose, a higher agenda, as it were. And this is the small stepping stones. And these are the issues that people are passionately getting involved in. But this, again, consequently could lead to something more. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on those type of things, definitely.
Yeah, keep the guidelines on the guidestones in mind as you're looking at things, and you know, realize that this is the outcome that's wanted.
Yes.
And you know, then, you know, watch as the events unfold.
Absolutely. So
we better.
What if you just quickly go back again to July 4th? And so in that sense, you're making another prediction here. What in more clear context can you put this in? Is there, do you think, you know, do you have an idea rather of what type of event we're looking at here? Would it be more symbolic or more in your face type of event? What do you think?
I think it will be in your face, and being a guy that has large V-shaped craft fly over its head, I really think that it's going to play into this new extraterrestrial idea. I think this is why the Pope's coming out with this, you know, aliens are our space brothers and they don't suffer original sin. Mm-hmm. I think that we might just have this contact. So I'm starting to think, because of the ID4, even Independence Day and all of that, that this might be an extraterrestrial event.
The 1013 X-Files, we've talked about that before, of course, but that's another programming,
absolutely,
if you will, going on.
Yeah, and they gave away the whole 9/11 event before it occurred, you know, on
absolutely.
The Lone Gunman.
Lone Gunman, yeah.
Yeah, like you say, his production company's 1013. This is, yeah, how much do you need? But now things are starting to get really strange as we start to look at this Barakhanaten.
Yes.
I mean, this picture blew my mind, Henrik.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. I really had no idea. And I had no idea the study that that very picture was gonna bring about. Now, just so you know, I have the picture up on the blog. I have it up on MySpace. I don't have it on freemantv.com yet.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the freemanperspective.blogspot.com, you will see this image of Barakhanaten and Renaissance Thai, is what I have titled this.
Mm.
This blew my mind, Henrik. I mean, when you start to look at this picture, when you see that I did not manipulate the faces of the president and Michelle at all.
Mm-hmm.
All I did was put their face over the face of Akhenaten for Barack and cut it in half. And I mean, it's identical.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing. And then after I had released this image, this was one of the first ones that I went into, just noting Barakhanaten, someone else wrote me and said, yeah, I was on the same type of, line and researching this as well, and I began to think that maybe Michelle looked like Queen Tai.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Queen Tai is the mother of Akhenaten. Okay, so
yeah.
Not his wife, but his mother.
Okay, yeah.
And when I took a high school photo of Michelle Obama, and I put her face over that of Queen Tai. Mm. And I mean, you can hardly even tell that I cut her face in half.
No, it's...
You can hardly...
I mean, I saw the Barakhanaten image from before. People have made the comparisons, but I haven't seen Queen Tai and Michelle overlaid like that. And that really blew my mind when I see it. And I will link up this image, of course, on Brass Creations as well. Credit to you, Freeman. You put this together. And then, of course, on top of that, you did this consequently or afterwards. You did the two kids that they have as well, didn't you?
Yes. As I started to get, I mean, I went through a whole line and lineage of the pharaohs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a new radio show now called The Free Zone on Oracle Broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And so last Saturday night at 8 p.m. is when my show is. I went over this whole bloodline and outlining the different pharaonic lines and how they correlated with the biblical patriarchs, much like Ralph Ellis and Tessarian have done on your show.
Yes.
So I went back to all of that data so that we could get that straight. Because, you know, once I started to put this picture together and realize that these people were identical replicas of these ancient pharaohs and that the pharaohs were related, then I came to the part that showing that Barakhanaten, or Akhenaten, sorry, I'm just getting them confused because they're the same people, had two daughters through Nefertiti.
Mm-hmm.
Now, He had many children, I believe six, but two of them to Nefertiti, these two daughters. And when I went to look at the ancient Egyptian fresco of the Akhenaten, his wife Nefertiti, with the two daughters, what you see is, of course, Akhenaten was the one that brought forth monotheism, and he was worshiping Aten. And so when you look at the frieze, the fresco of Akhenaten with his wife and the two daughters, you'll see the rays of the sun coming down and shining upon them. And then they're holding flowers, the daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get to the Secret Service's nicknames for the first family, you will find that the Malaya is Radiance.
Mm-hmm.
Is her secret name, and Sasha is Rosebud.
Okay.
Which of course was another famous code word passed through the Knights of Malta and that Citizen Kane, was it? Okay. Rosebud was the password.
Ah, okay, yeah, there we go. That's right.
But when we're looking at the image, though, when we're looking at the image of Akhenaten with Nefertiti, and we see him with his two daughters, and we see the radiance, and we see the rosebuds, you know, is this coincidence?
Hmm.
I wonder.
No.
No, yeah, not at all. And then, of course, Obama is renegade, and Michelle is renaissance, and that's why I call the picture Barack Akhenaten Renaissance Tie.
Right, right. And renegade, again, that's very much like, well, Akhenaten, actually, the renegade who you know, went against the grain in a sense and took off and did his own thing and set up his own city down there and things like that, you know. So it plays into it again, actually.
Yes, absolutely. And that's when you get to Heliopolis, that is the sun and is known as the city of On or the city of Anu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we start to get to the correlations with the Elohim or Zechariah Sitchin's studies. And once you start to track this bloodline of Akhenaten, and you go back and back and back, all the way back, you end up with the biblical patriarchs. But if you go one more step back, you end up with Enki having sex with Eve. And so, according to like Lawrence Gardner's work, and also Zechariah Sitchin, but Lawrence Gardner took the lineage a bit further than Sitchin did.
Mm-hmm.
And he has these Hyksos kings connected to Enki having sex with Eve, which then gave birth to, I don't have the lines in front of me, Cain, right? So we have the Enki having sex with Eve, creating this new bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
So there was the bloodline of Adam and Eve that were the Lulu, but then the Enki and Eve produced Cain. And the line of Cain comes down through Aten, who was the first Hyksos king of Cush, then Enoch, and then Methuselah, Noah, Shem, and then down into Abraham, and then we get to the biblical patriarchs. But we can track these back to perhaps the certain serpent people.
Yes.
Now, the reason I bring this up is because when Akhenaten came into power, things got very strange. Akhenaten looked very alien.
Yeah.
And he was known as this hermaphroditic king. You know, he had a very feminine shaped body, a very weird shaped body. They made it news in the BBC just to highlight that Akhenaten was a hermaphroditic king. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why they bring this into public attention again.
Right, right. Hmm. The elongated head, very weird, facial structure overall. It looks very, very weird in a way, definitely.
Exactly. And then, of course, when you see I know that Sasha's going to hate me for it, but when you look at the image of Sasha and Malaya, you see that they do have these cone heads. They have these very alien heads. And then, of course, these are the people that brought in monotheism and basically brought the Holy Roman Empire together.
There we go. And again, we're back. We're looping in. We're spiraling. It's cycles we're watching here, in a sense, and we're, you know, the similar themes are being repeated, but they're brought into the context of whatever the properties are of the time that we're currently in. Meaning that we have now we're going to probably see the unification of the world, as it were, a global society being brought together. A monotheist, in that sense, you're going to bring everything is one, right? The mono, This is the monad, and this is probably one of the guys who's going to help to bring that in, Barakhanaten. And so what we're seeing here is a reflection of either history repeating itself in that sense, or a very, very highly skilled and planned, a plan, basically. That's what we're potentially, an agenda, exactly, and a few selected people, as it were, are being guided to be, to play these kind of parts. Now, when you look at this stuff, do you think that it is planned, every single thing, or do you think that this is a resonant wave or an energy or a type of force that is running throughout history, and this is repeating itself, as it were? What's your take on that?
I do think it's ceremonial magic. I do think it's ritual. Definitely a plan. Definitely been outlined for so long. Now, the curious thing is that back in my early days of study, I started I've always been into ancient astronauts, been into mummification, been into all of these ancient structures and UFOs and ETs. Mm-hmm. But when you start to look into mummification, you'll learn that there is a mysterious trait that the Egyptians had for mummification that we cannot reproduce. And so they tried to mummify, I think it was Lenin, and he just ended up rotting. They could not reproduce whatever it was that the Egyptians knew to mummify and keep these mummies from decomposing.
Mm-hmm.
What this does is allows for a viable cell to survive. And therefore, I was waiting for this Armageddon script is what I'm seeing going on. That's what I believe is happening, is this is an Armageddon script. They wrote out the script way back when, the Bible and all of that, and now they're fulfilling these type of scripts. That's why HW is known as Magog, and W was given the scroll of Gog. If you know the Revelations, Magog mm-hmm. and Gog are the ones that bring about this war.
Yes.
I think Thutmose III was one that went to war at Megiddo, which is Armageddon.
Yes.
But that's kind of an outside point.
A good point, but yeah.
So we're looking at this Armageddon script unfolding in front of us, and I do feel like it has been outlined and set up long before, like the Bene Gesserit witches of Dune, you know, outlining this and bringing it forward.
Mm-hmm. Is it an experiment? Do you think we talked about the moon, for instance, previously. It's almost like everything has been set up into the big mechanism, the experiment, the petri dish that we're currently in, and it's been highly managed, you know, from above, in a sense. Or do you think it's more just, again, it's just a reflection of our collective unconscious. This is archetypes playing out again and again, over and over, and this is just a repetitive cycle. It's just a natural law, if you will, but we haven't just managed to break it yet. What do you think?
Well, I think that they're kind of setting themselves up to be the next gods. I think that as we go through this processional cycle, and we are now entering into this new age, if we look at what they did with the ancient past and taking the pharaonic bloodlines and turning them into these deities or the biblical patriarchs, and now they're all worshipped. I think that they're trying to do a very similar thing. Now, knowing that there is this cyclical construct or catastrophes that occur, if you are aware of this knowledge, then you can prepare things beforehand. And this, to me, is the reason for building temples like Luxor and Karnak, for building Chaco Canyon, for building the Stonehenge. All of these were to watch time, and so that they would know when these things were going to occur and could prepare for these, such as building their deep vaults there in Norway and the different preparations making for the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
As a kind of a funny side note, when we started to get into the Christian theology, then they went and scrubbed all the faces of the gods, the ancient gods, the pantheon off the wall, and replaced them with the saints.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just as I was saying, I was just in Hollywood, and I visited the Catholic Church there, which has all the astronomical symbols or signs of when it was placed there, very astrological church. But you go inside and you're walking down the aisle and you'll see the line of saints that they have painted up there on the wall. And I have these pictures on my MySpace. The saints two that I noticed, which were both marked as Saint John, were Leonardo DiCaprio and Mel Gibson.
Oh, yes. That's a good one. That's rich.
Oh, that's right there in the Catholic Church in Los Angeles.
The new saints, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like they are, beginning to do this type of setup. And then we watch, as we were commenting on the invocations, that they were invoking Amen. Just a very curious connection with all of that.
And in a way, I think what needs to be pointed out also is in a way, they are already our gods, at least the majority. In a way, I'm not talking about the people who, listen to this show, for instance, who managed to, disconnect from the mainstream, as it were, and can, think a little bit for themselves. But if we think about it in the context of the masses and again, the celebrity culture, all of that stuff that is going on, those are literally the stars that people are now looking to for their mythology onto, that they're going to the movies, they're following the stars still in that context, and these are the new gods. So even if this actually becomes even more literal down the road here, we just have to wait and see and continue watching this, of course. But I already see that is the case, basically.
Exactly. And I'd like to highlight a couple more of the little signposts that I've noticed. Mm-hmm. Now, when the shock and awe occurred, that was the vernal equinox, March 21st, when they instituted the shock and awe campaign. Mm-hmm. Now, shock and awe is technically known as rapid dominance. And they called it shock and awe.
Almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the shock and awe, which I've shown time and again, is related to the word Shekinah, which is the Hebrew Holy Spirit. Or if you were to ask a Freemason what the Shekinah is, he would say it's the cloud of brotherhood that surrounds the Masonic altar. Hmm. So Shekinah is a word that is absolutely played within Freemasonry, and it is this Holy Spirit. It's the Holy Spirit that surrounded the Ark of the Covenant, which again plays into the Temple Mount and the Templars and all of that.
Yeah.
So on the vernal equinox, we established the shock and awe campaign, and then it ended on the Walsburg night, or Walsburgis night, which is supposed to be a time when the planes of the dead and the living are intermingled. So we have this blood sacrifice. The shock and awe comes down, strikes Nebuchadnezzar. Saddam Hussein says he's Nebuchadnezzar reincarnated, and they use the mother of all bombs, which they call the Moab. And this is the story of Nebuchadnezzar in the Bible, who is Lucifer in the King James Bible. Mm-hmm. So we're back to the Luciferian connection again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this all occurred on March 21st, 2003. Well, March 1st, the vernal equinox, 2004, just happens to be the day that Zahi Hawass unveiled the statue of Queen Tai,
mm-hmm.
along with the recreation of Ramses' sarcophagus. So we have this vernal equinox connection to this and to Queen Tai, to the shock and awe. But it also turns out that March 21st, the vernal equinox, is also the new year. It is also the day when we move into the age of Aries, or the time of Aries, which is, of course, our new space-based program.
Yes.
And it is also the New Year Day for the Baha'i faith.
Aha, uh-huh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. The New World Religion. Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, who is more better prepared to become this one world religion than the Baha'i, the followers of Baha'u'llah?
Have you seen their temple structures that they have in Jerusalem, the Haifa, or what the heck is it, the area?
Yeah, I just started into this research, so
okay, yeah.
I don't. What can you tell me?
Well, I mean, it's just incredible. I think it's built even on I think it's seven tiers or hills that's built on a different set of, basically layers. So you can walk up this area, and then you get to the main temple. They have two or three up there, And I mean, again, whoever built this has shitload of money, let me tell you that. And
exactly,
and, you know,
exactly.
It's not, you know, just anybody who do this stuff. And yet again, we see the same basic architecture is there, the same basic pillars or orders are there. It's Grecian Romanesque, you know, bridging over to all these other, you know, if we tie it back further, like we've done with Dan Tatman, this has roots in the Hebrew and further back that type of, you know, not archaeology but architecture. But they have a few different sites across the world. They have built one in. See, I almost need to put this up again.
Big in Australia.
Is it Australia? The Lotus or something like that is called. It's just incredible building, you know. It's absolutely stunning. It's beautiful, of course, but again, I it's definitely, you know, weird to me looking at this stuff because it's, to me, it feels like the Baha'i faith really gone under the radar. Is a lot of people involved in it and engaged in it, but at least I haven't really heard about this until just over a year ago or something like that when I kind of stumbled upon it.
Exactly.
And a lot of powerful people, as it were, are involved in this. A lot of important people, a lot of UM people are belonging to the Baha'i faith, you know.
I did an ayahuasca ritual with a Baha'i who is a 33rd degree Freemason.
That too, huh? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm pulling up a few pictures here. If you haven't seen those pictures, I'm going to link this article up as well. So people can take a look at some of these pictures of the temples. They have even an interactive map of the Baha'i World Center, as it's called. And this is just incredible stuff, actually. And they have it all over the world, but mainly this site in Israel, in Haifa. But again, I mean, what does that, you know, tell us again? Do they really need to build the actual temple on Temple Mount, or has it already been done, you know, Haifa,
exactly.
and this is it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And they have Solomon's Temple rebuilt in Portland as well. I visited that while I was there. I've got some great film coming from that.
Okay, really? Awesome.
Definitely.
One thing, too, here worth mentioning is the Baha'i was involved in actually the Earth Summit back in Rio, 1992, I think it was. And they dedicated this really, really interesting peace monument, which basically is the two pyramids of the, or two triangles, I should say, of let's take the seal of Solomon, right? The star that's the Star of David. But if you remove those from each other and just let the points touch each other briefly, it's like an hourglass shape of it.
Right.
And they brought, I think, earth from very, very many different locations from around the world, and poured this into the monument to kind of symbolize that, you know, this is unity now, bringing everything together. And people can read more about this. I will have this article linked up. But it's, again, it's one of these religions that is definitely worth looking into and researching a whole lot more, because it's a lot of stuff going on there, that's for sure.
That goes right back to the symbolism of Michelle Obama's dress, the Black Widow dress that she wore at the inauguration, you know, that had the hourglass. And she's wearing this red and black, which are the colors of Upper and Lower Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Also Black Widow symbolism, but it had the two triangles coming together in her dress with the colors of Upper and Lower Egypt.
Interesting.
And then one other connection with this whole bloodline, with the Akhenaten line, we get back to Thothmosis III, who I believe is Moses in the biblical patriarchs, and the symbolic sacrifice of Moses was just before the capping of the Great Pyramid with gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What had happened was that Egyptian Flight 990 flew out of LAX and was heading to LaGuardia in New York to head off to the Giza Plateau prior to the capping of the Great Pyramid with gold.
Mm-hmm.
Egyptian Flight 990 then stopped at, I believe it was Patterson Air Force Base, an Air Force base that has never had a passenger liner ever land there before or since, and it's most especially an Egyptian or foreign passenger liner landing at this military base has never occurred. There, they picked up 33 Egyptian military and a lead scientist of Jet Propulsion Laboratories. Now, once again, let's realize who these guys are. We're going back to Jack Parsons. We're going back to L. Ron Hubbard. We're looking at the idea of occultism, that these guys believe they could incarnate moon children, incarnate entities into people. These are the guys running the space program. And so they pick up 33 Egyptian military and scientists from Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and then they fly off to LaGuardia and prepare to leave for the Giza Plateau. Just right before Y2K, and all of a sudden, this airplane takes a nosedive into the ocean. The pilot calls out a Muslim prayer, and they say it's pilot suicide because they weren't ready for the programming of terrorism yet.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I remember that now. That is really, really interesting.
Well, here's the curious part. You know what that airplane was titled?
Nope.
Thutmose the Third. That was the name of the airplane. It was painted down the side of the airplane, and it had the symbol Horus on there. Thutmose the Third is this direct line of Akhenaten, is who I believe to be Moses in the Bible, and he was sacrificed with these 33 Egyptian military and head scientist of Jet Propulsions. And then after that moment, the headline comes to the USA Today, says, Muslims stop the Freemasons from capping the Great Pyramid with gold.
There you go. I think it was, I'm reminded now here that I think it was Hoagland who wrote about this, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
A little bit about this, because that's really, really interesting. And again, it went totally under my radar. And I really wasn't involved in that type of research at that point, you know, myself. But, you know, it's incredible looking back into, you know, well, obviously history, but just, you know, fairly recently, so to speak, and see these incredible high points of events that have taken place that has, you know, high occult ritual behind them. And this is definitely, you know, high up there on the scale, as it were, of these types of events. Really, really interesting.
That's why I'm here, Henrik.
That's good. Well, it's awesome, Freeman. And again, you're doing awesome work. It's great, and this has just been fabulous, you know, to have you back on and really, you know, talk about this stuff again and bring some of this information out. I mean, we can begin to round things up here at this point. Is there anything more you'd like to touch upon or mention here before we begin to finish for this time?
Absolutely. Just a couple more quick notes. The Atlantis found on Google Earth. I don't know if you caught that.
No, I didn't. Tell us about it.
It was reported on Fox News and The Sun in England. A Google Earther, someone searching Google Earth, found this structure 3.5 miles under the ocean, which was just outside of the Canary Islands, and they believe it, you know, he believes that it was well placed to be this idea, the structures of Atlantis. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I went to university to study ancient architecture, and when I saw the structure that they were showing here, just the outlines of it can be seen, I recognized immediately that this was an Egyptian structure. And so I took the mortuary temple from the Giza Plateau, and I superimposed it over the structure that they found under the ocean, and it is near identical match. Definitely the angles of construction are an identical match. And I actually think that if I take Thutmose's, the third, his temple, and were to flip it upside down and place it on top of the structure, it would fit identically. But the angles of the causeway, the angle of the structures, everything matches perfectly with the mortuary temple of the Giza Plateau with this new discovery by Google Earth. And, of course, they're writing it off and saying that, no, it's just an anomaly in the,
sure.
You know.
Sure. But do you think it's valid? Do you think it's
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, because, I don't know if it's Atlantis, but it's obviously Egyptian. I sent you a picture there with the Egyptian mortuary temple sitting on top of it, and it kind of obscured. Maybe I should have set it aside, but you can see that the angles of construction are identical. And you got to realize that when the Egyptians were building, they were incorporating the Fibonacci series. Yeah. They would make buildings over 500 years and continue to incorporate this series over 50 generations. So these type of angle, you know, this is very important to their structure.
Absolutely. Well, this is the classical style of architecture that has been trickling down from the ancient world to us. And again, I will have, I just found the Sun article as well. I've linked this up, and I can put your image there as well, so people can take a good look at it. It's really interesting. I haven't heard about it before, and this was just That was just about 2 days ago when this came out. So this is hot stuff, as it were, from the presses.
Absolutely.
Really interesting. Wow.
I try to bring you the hot stuff, you know, the eugenics program as well. You might want to look into, you know, the eugenics the Pope is talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely needs to be highlighted. Very, very interesting stuff.
And then just as a conclusion, when Barack Obama, Barack-a-Natin, was speaking before the public, he quoted a Hopi prophecy. He said, "We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change that we seek." So I sought out that Hopi prophecy, and I thought maybe if you would allow me, I would read it very quickly. It's not long.
Absolutely. Please go ahead.
And so that we can see now, let's, you know, understand that this is an end of the world prophecy that our president was highlighting in a speech. So from the elders of the Hopi, "You have been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must tell the people that this is the hour. And there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Do the children want what they see in you? Where is your water? Know your garden. Does your life corn grow? It is time to speak your truth. Create your community. Be good to each other and do not look outside yourself for the leader. This could be a good time. There is a river flowing now very fast, and it is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they are being torn apart, and they will suffer greatly. No, the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above water. See who is in there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally. Least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for." That's what I'm trying to say.
That's interesting. So that's the last line that I remember that line from the inauguration address. And that's really interesting because, again, what begins to open up here is, a very highly dense and rich symbolic speech, as it always is. But again, on the surface, I just thought that he's kind of niched in a few New Age type of, phrases here and there, and nothing more much beyond that. But that's really, really interesting. But I mean, again, what do you think that? What does that mean? Because you can set that against the context of let's say the Georgia Guidestones, again, you know, that this is he's not addressing us here in a sense. He's addressing maybe the elite, as it were. What do you think, Freeman?
Yeah, coming from his mouth, absolutely. But we could turn this, and this is the point that we're at. Now that we're recognizing that they want our reactions, that they're setting the stage for these type of events, it is time for us to let go. It is time for us to release ourselves from the indoctrination that we've been led to believe. We now know in America that the founding fathers weren't these great beloved people. We know that we can let go of all of these structures that are holding us into place. We don't need to chase the news. We don't need to chase the demons. It's time for us to have faith in ourselves because we are the ones we've been waiting for. So I see it as a promotion for us to allow ourselves to flow with the river because it does have a destination. And that has been the underlying factor of all of my research, is that the world is miraculous if you allow the guiding forces to guide you and you don't follow your own reactions that they have instilled in you, then we could lead this time to a new beneficial age of humanity, and we could quickly disperse the rule of these elite because they are so few and we are so many. The only thing that keeps them in power is our holographic belief that they belong there.
Awesome stuff, Freeman. FreemanTV.com, that's the website, and just to mention for us a few of the videos, the DVDs that you have out there for people who want to, you know, get more from your work and at the same time help to support you so you can continue some of your work, Freeman.
Absolutely. I highly recommend The Freeman Perspective. I'm thinking about changing the title of that one, but The Freeman Perspective is a 3-hour DVD. It's broken up into five different sections, so you don't have to sit there for 3 hours. It's different topics. It gets into corporate logos and their occult meanings, the goddess Columbia and who she really is, the extraterrestrial connections to that. It covers HAARP. It has the HAARP documentary that I've been referring to in this show. And then it gets into rainbow and the ideas of synchronicity and this concluding statement that I threw out with you. So all of that is wrapped up in the one DVD, The Freeman Perspective. So if you want the whole thing as far as that's the best one to look at. But then I went ahead and ended up making a film with Tex Mars on the hand signs and gestures of the Illuminati, based on his book Codex Magica. And we do a wonderful interview. And as I say, I have the film of the Denver International Airport's mural in there as well, coupled with Seinfeld giving Masonic symbols and many more amazing things in that. I have another DVD called The Return of the Nephilim, which stars mostly Michael Tesserian. You get a good 3 hours of Michael, but I've also interviewed Giorgio Tsoukalos of the Ancient Astronaut Society and Aurelian, and I show you a bunch of the news clips from when the Aurelians announced that they had birthed their first clone, so that you can start to understand that maybe Barak might just be the clone of Akhenaten, because it is a physical possibility. And then finally, Anna Nicole Brittany and Mind Control, which of course is the show that shut down your server when I visited you that time to discuss all the nefarious dealings in what I believe was a high occult ritual with the sacrifice of Anna Nicole's baby and herself and all the strange weirdness that went on with that. Mm-hmm. And I have not given up on that study. I'm still looking into it. And now we've got the whole John Travolta connection with his child dying in the Bahamas as well, mm-hmm. being brought to Ocala, Florida. I don't intend to dig too deeply into that, because I feel like I outlined enough for you to go and use your discerning mind to discover what rituals are being performed around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely eye-opening material, that's for sure. Again, the website, freemantv.com. From there, you can find links to Freeman's blog, his YouTube channel, and a whole lot more. So do definitely take a look at that. Freeman, great having you on, as always, and hopefully we'll see you either in London or potentially in the U.S. for real this time, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I sure hope so, Henrik. I hope to be just shaking your hand there in London in just a few short weeks.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Freeman. Awesome.
Thank you.
That's our program with Freeman. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We'll be back with Ian Crane on Thursday. We are going to talk about the upcoming conference, Alternative View 2, in London. And our next live show is coming up soon. Look out for announcements on the website. And I want to remind you that we want to hear your music. If you're making your own music and are interested in having it played on Red Ice Radio, go to our radio archive and click on bumper music at the top to read more. My thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren. I want you to take good care of yourself, and we'll talk more soon. Bye-bye.